Professor Peter Lynham.
Yes. So I got thinking, well, how has the COVID lockdown affected religions that are not ones that, you know, function as we're used to religions in New Zealand?
Good.
And that's what led me to think about how would it affect Buddhism in Japan? Because Japan's a very interesting case of a modern society, but not a Western society as such, an Asian society.
But also rooted in pretty epic tradition, and they're really about that, aren't they?
Precisely, yes.
I'm jealous of anyone that's been to Japan. You know? I haven't been.
You haven't been? Ah, well, it's a fascinating place to go to, and immediately one of the first things you do see is very large Buddhist shrines, but of course you also see Shinto shrines. And this is an extra complication in the story, because Shinto is the traditional Japanese, if you like, national religion. And, you know, almost all Japanese will have some kind of Shinto rituals in the course of their life, because that's just the way in which, being a good Japanese, you do. So for marriage and things like that.
I was about to ask, like a sweet 16 type stuff, or like coming of age,
yes.
Kind of.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. That's right. So significant life events will usually involve some kind of attendance at the Shinto shrine. But it is interesting that for some events, Buddhism comes into the picture. So Buddhism, a much, much larger religion, certainly not in any way Japanese in origin, you know, coming originally from India and spreading right throughout South and East Asia. But it came to Japan in the 5th century, and it took on quite a distinctive Japanese flavor. So people often talk about Zen Buddhism.
Yeah, that's sort of what springs to mind for me, Peter. The sort of Zen side of things. And it doesn't really make me think, you know, being a Zen Buddhist doesn't sound like they would be going to places of worship, or do they?
You can just do it anywhere. It's in the mind type thing.
So, yeah, so Zen Buddhism would be practices, but it certainly does also involve monks and temples.
Okay.
But they exist to teach these practices.
Yes.
And so it's very interesting to think of the ways in which they would survive. You know, practically speaking, how does this religion flourish in a place like Japan? And you can see that in a way Buddhism is very well adapted to suit a secular society, because, as you say, Zen can be picked up really by anyone as a way of practice. But then I sent you this article that I found, though I didn't originally find it in the Thai newspaper, but that just happened to be the one I could send you, which says that it's been extraordinarily difficult for Buddhists during the COVID lockdown, precisely because they need to find something to do that will bring in money.
Right, right.
And it seems odd that Buddhists would worry about money. You would think of all religions, it would have least concern for money. After all, the Buddhist monk is supposed to live on alms from the people. So you just give them money, and there should be no real reflection of money at all. But they need money to survive. And if people aren't going to the temples, then they're in big, big trouble.
Right, so what have they been getting up to?
this fascinating article suggests all sorts of ways in which they've, in effect, marketed Buddhism. They've found things to do, products, in effect, that people might want to opt into.
Wait a minute, is this more people selling me books on Queen Street?
Not quite like that.
Not keen.
But, you know, I mean, in a wider sense, it's interesting that Buddhism is, in fact, in Japan, fractionalized into all sorts of different groups and different emphases. And so that there are different people who project forms of Buddhism that are more suitable, as they see it, for the present day and age.
It's a fine line, though, isn't it? Because when you think of religion in its purest form, it should be like unfucked by money, but I do see how they need to maintain. But sounds like a kind of a tightrope dance there. You don't want to sell out your whole stees, do you?
And, well, you see, there's inevitably some religious competition. And Buddhists are caught in that competition because there's the competition between Shinto and Buddhism. And, you know, Buddhism has had its hard days in Japan during the rise of the Meiji and then the military takeover in the 1920s and 30s. Buddhism was subject to real hostility because Shinto was seen as the pure Japanese religion.
Mm.
And Buddhism was seen as a foreign import and so was pushed to the edge. Then, you know, in New Zealand, we have a very active branch of Japanese Zen Buddhism called Soka Gakkai, which is a group that really emphasizes world peace. Soka Gakkai.
Gakkai. Okay, cool.
And its leader, who founded it against considerable hostility from the Japanese government, kind of marketed religion as a source of world peace and world prosperity.
Well, surely that's got to be one of the main goals. Surely.
Yes. You just have to find something that people want to join and belong to.
Mm.
So, I mean, effectively what they did was created a lay group that functioned outside of temples. That it was movements that people joined and belonging to them and learning their ways of thinking about Buddhism, which were based on the Lotus, reciting the Lotus Sutra. And so that became a model of a way to be Buddhist that actually reveled in the fact that the temple was not the central way to do Buddhism. Mm.
It's interesting you talk about, you know, sort of expectations of religions, because I've been Southeast Asia and I've got a really fond memory of seeing a few Buddhist monks on a boat, and they were like mucking around on their phones, and I was like, I felt like I just was seeing behind the thing a little bit. But then you realize that you hold these people in a strange realm. You almost want them to be out of the society that I'm in, and living on a higher plane. But at the end of the day, they are just living in society as well. You know, it's a really weird thing. It was a real like, oh, fucking hell, they're just normal people trying to.
And this is particularly marked in, say, Thai Buddhism, where in Thai Buddhism, it's a very, very powerful part.
It was Thailand
In Thailand, in the operation of society, and similarly in Myanmar. And in those places, militant Buddhism, it seems like a contradiction in terms, is rapidly, if you like, adopting modern techniques in order to help them to enforce their centrality to the society. So both in Thai and Myanmar Buddhism, they're quite deliberately trying to get the support of the government to suppress other religious movements.
Interesting.
And while that seems inconsistent, that's the character. And then also recruiting young people who have perhaps little idea of what they're doing when they join Buddhist monasteries.
Mm-hmm.
And they take them away for, you know, weekend retreats or for short holidays. This is a requirement of the Thai king, for example, that they have to be initiated in as a Buddhist monk.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
With Buddhism and where it sits in society, what do Buddhists typically do in the way of helping others, Peter?
Oh, well, charity is, you know, central to the Buddhist ethic.
Mm.
And moreover, it is a good work through which you will accumulate those things that will help to preserve you for the life to come. So if you can store up credit points as a Buddhist, then you've got a good hope that in reincarnation, and the Buddhist way of idea of reincarnation is somewhat different from the original Hindu idea. It's a reform of that.
Mm.
But it certainly believes that the mode of your life and the values of your life will reflect on the outcomes when you die. And so that makes Buddhist charity okay. But Buddhist charity significantly is selective in the way it focuses. So there's little inclination to say that everybody in the world has to be helped.
Mm-hmm.
It's rather that the deserving should be helped, and you need to get the eye to understand who are the deserving. And you're often cultivating inner virtues in the process of giving. And so this partly explains the puzzle in many Asian societies of the apparent lining up beside each other of extreme luxury and extreme poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is the attitude within that's the critical attitude. And in the end, whereas Westerners tend to just throw themselves with energy into we've got to change this, the motive for fighting for social change is not the central one. It is rather the cultivating of the inner virtue.
Right. And then splashed in the we must keep the sort of the machine rolling a little bit, in the sense that now they can't have people visiting, and it seemed tourism was a massive thing, like going to temples when you're in Southeast Asia is the done thing.
Certainly that's the case in Japan as well.
And
it's interesting that in Japan, Buddhism and Shinto have on and off reached excellent accords that, for example, one plays the role, I think it's the Buddhists play the role in funerals, but Shinto plays the role in births.
Hmm.
And so there's a series of ways in which a Japanese really doesn't think of themselves. I mean, there are polls which will tell you the proportion of Japanese who are Buddhist and the proportion of Shinto, always with a slight majority to Shinto. But most Japanese see religion as a set of ceremonies which you will choose as suits you for the purpose. So they know that these are Buddhist ceremonies I'm going to today, and these are Shinto ceremonies I'm going to tomorrow. But they don't feel as though they're being called to make contradictory commitments. And the challenge in the contemporary society, and especially a society when everything goes online, is so what now are the functions that religions play? If in fact it's not that I'm Buddhist, but what does Buddhism have to offer me, and where do I need Buddhism at this particular point?
True. These are all questions that one must ask themselves, especially if you're shopping around for a new religion and or confirming the one you've got.
Yes, and I think that it's such a different way of thinking about religion than we would think about in New Zealand.
Yeah, and that's good, actually. It's good people have an option that might fit into their life a little bit better than whatever format they've been sort of brought up in. You know?
Yeah, but see, for a lot of young people, I mean, why do they need to go through Shinto ceremonies? Why do they need to go through Buddhist ceremonies at any particular point? And so this is where it's kind of critical for Buddhism in Japan that it really does pick up the Zen side, the inner peace side, because that's much more likely to translate into something that young people can understand.
Now than more than ever.
Yeah, it feels like it's very of the time.
Obscure rites or practical practices for peace of mind. I mean, bear in mind that most Japanese live in huge urban areas where the space to think and the space to relax and the space to be yourself are very, very limited.
It might be. It's kind of more attractive to work on oneself than the traditional give oneself over to an entity.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's a testing time. It's a testing time,
so.
COVID. For all religions, it's interesting to see how they come out of it.
Right on. And as per Peter, you've given us heaps to think about. We'll catch you next Monday.
Look forward to it. Bye-bye.
Thank you, mate.